Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the last month of hurricane season. Welcome to the month we give thanks and praise, and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us this morning, this beautiful Monday morning, the first day of November. And it's the first Monday, and that means it's Mortgage Monday here and with Jabir Najir of Rajan Mortgage. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Good morning, Gretchen. I appreciate you having me again for another Mortgage Monday.
I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. So let's get kind of started because there's one particular item of interest that I thought maybe you could shed some light on, among other things, and we are going to get to the rates. Don't worry. But I was reading somewhere where desktop appraisals, which are being done now, in a lot of cases, are maybe a permanent fixture. First of all, can you tell us what a desktop appraisal is and why it's moving more towards that way possibly?
Well, pretty much a desktop appraisal is an appraisal that is done by an appraiser basically from their desktop, from their computer, sitting in their office or at home or wherever they choose to work on their computer. And they're basically just evaluating the market based on the home, of course, the subject property being your home that you're either purchasing or refinancing. They look at certain things such as square footage, the year of the home, the neighborhood, how many bedrooms, bathrooms, the build of the house, whether it's brick or wood frame, and it compared to other homes in the area, because there's so much data out there, especially over the last year and a half, of homes being sold all throughout the U.S. that they could just look at other homes in the area to determine what the value of that home should be. And that's without actually having to come to your home and go into the home and inspect the home to take pictures and all that kind of stuff that they used to do.
Now, I know that is probably very convenient for all parties concerned, but I have a problem with it. Of course I do. But number one, you're going to sit at a desk with just generic information, and make an assessment about the value of my home sight unseen. I have an issue with that. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. To the homeowner and to the buyer. There may be reasons why that assessment may not be accurate. So many different reasons. I mean, because a lot of it is just generic information, but it has no real bearing on the actual condition of the home. Do desktop appraisers work with the inspectors in terms of gathering additional details?
Generally, no. Generally, the inspector and the appraiser never speak in the majority of, if not all, whether it's refinance or purchase transactions. They hardly ever, if ever, speak at all, because they're two totally separate independent inspections done. Sometimes an appraiser will see something of concern in the appraisal. And in the appraisal, or in his inspection, rather, when he comes to the home to appraise the home, and he or she may put in the appraisal that they notice something and they advise having the buyer or the owner get an inspection for further evaluation. But once you actually get that new inspection, the home inspection, it really never has to go over to the appraiser to reevaluate.
How, in the years that you've been doing mortgages, how accurate do you find these desktop appraisals to be?
They're generally within range. And yes, they're, and I say generally within range because you could possibly have a home that has a lot of deferred maintenance, and there's no way that the appraiser would know unless they did a drive-by appraisal just to see the exterior. But sometimes the exterior of a home looks very, very good, and the interior needs a lot of work. So that could be a very, very big concern there. But even now with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, we have actually been getting a lot of appraisal waivers over the last, probably close to a year now, that once we, both on purchases and refinances, where we put in the system through the automated underwriting system that somebody's purchasing a home or refinancing a home for a certain dollar amount, and we put what the value of the home should be. And usually for purchases, we put the value at what the purchase price is. And on refinances, we put the value based on what the homeowner believes the home may be valued at. Sometimes they use Zillow, not Fannie Mae, but, you know, between myself or the homeowner may use Zillow to put us within a certain ballpark. And don't get me wrong, Zillow is not the most accurate thing to use, but it kind of puts you within a ballpark. You're not going to, generally speaking, you're not going to have a home that Zillow says is 300 and it's really worth 500. It's not, it could be off, but it's generally not that far off. So based on that information, you actually just put in the system, and the system will actually say if it actually accepted the estimated value or not. If it did not accept the estimated value, then we have to order an appraisal. But many times, especially on refinances that have 20% or more equity, we're getting appraisal waivers that the appraiser never has to set foot inside the borrower's home. And I've had a couple purchases where we didn't have to have an appraisal either. We got an appraisal waiver, and it actually made the process a lot faster. We could close those in 2 to 2.5 weeks, sometimes 3 at the max. But 2 to 2.5 weeks, if we don't need an appraisal, is not unrealistic.
Now, why is it this lean toward that? Is it the time factor, or is it that maybe there's a shortage of appraisers? Is that one reason? Can you talk a little bit about that, your perspective?
It could be shortage of appraisers in addition to just a lot of transactions right now that sometimes, I mean, depending on where the home is located, you know, we've had appraisers from the time of order to time they're able to get out to the property being 3 to 4 days and sometimes 7 days. And there's been times that appraiser says, hey, I can't make it out to that home for 2.5 weeks. I mean, at that point, we should be looking to wrap up the file, not just getting the appraiser out to the home. So that could possibly be a lean towards why they're leaning towards that. On the appraisal waivers, really, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has so much data on homes that they have actually financed themselves in the same neighborhood that you're financing your home. So a lot of times they're saying, hey, we have financed, I don't know, you know, 18 homes in this particular neighborhood. Not even in the area, but in that particular neighborhood, and they have a good idea what that homes in that neighborhood should be valued at. So they're saying we don't need an appraisal. We have enough data in order to appraise the home. So that could be a lean towards it. I mean, I have my own reservations on it, only because if they are so big on the push towards that, I know in the past, there has been, I don't recall what they actually call it. I think they call them invisible or ghost appraisals or air appraisals, where there has, and I'm not sure, you know, what safety measures they have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But many years ago, there were homes that were being financed in areas that there was no home. So you get an appraisal for, a 3,000 square foot home worth $450,000, in pick your city, it doesn't matter. And then there were a ring of brokers, bars, and home flippers, and they're financing a bunch of properties and getting cash out refinances or purchases, and you know the banks are wiring money. Of course, the title company has to be involved in this whole scheme, and they're making millions and millions of dollars, and then there's no payments being made on the mortgages. And when the mortgage companies go to foreclose on the properties, they're like, oh, wow, there's not a 4,000-square-foot home here. There's just dirt and acres of dirt. So, you know, that could cause a possibility. I should say there is a possibility that there could be some schemes and scams going on to get free money from the banks out of this. I mean, normally those people end up going to jail for a very, very long time when they get caught. I don't know why they would attempt to do that, but, you know, it does put a strain on the financial system.
And I guess that is going to kind of lead me, that's actually going to transition into another subject I wanted to talk to you about this morning. I saw a little bit about, an increase in mortgage fraud. And I was going to ask how that occurs and who are the, you know, people that are most likely to be targeted.
So there's different types of mortgage fraudsters, some that some people may not actually think may be that big of a deal, but it is a very big deal, which is the easiest one is occupancy fraud, where you have a home, you have a primary residence, or even you're renting and you don't plan to move from the home that you're renting, and you buy a property has an investment that you intend to have an investment property, but you purchase it as a primary residence, because primary residences have a lower down payment, but they also have lower interest rates. So somebody will actually purchase this property for 3.5%, 5% down instead of the 15 to 20% that you should put down for investment property. The rate is probably a point, maybe even a point and a half lower, depending on, you know, the profile, and you never move into the home. So that's the first thing, is the occupancy fraud. But then there's so much other types of frauds. There is the pay stubs and income fraud. And sometimes with some of these types of fraud, it's very hard for the lenders to verify certain information, or if they do verify, the process is slow. So they may not be able to verify information for months or even years after you actually close on the home. So just because you close on a home and you move into a home doesn't mean you're scot-free. You can actually get a call or investigation start on you 6 months, a year. I mean, we hear about situations where a random file gets pulled for audit 3 years later, and they find out there's all types of stuff that's going on, that went on, whether the bank statements were fake or the pay stubs were fake, or say that you were working at a job for X amount of years, but you just got a new job, and actually provide pay stubs that show you're making a lot more money than you really are. Because you don't have W-2s for this new job that just started in 2021, you get into this home because your debt-to-income ratio works, only to find out later on that that job was either fake or the pay stubs were made up. Or you may have somebody from the HR department, somebody who works for this small company, say, yes, this person makes X amount of dollars, and they really don't. So there's different ways that fraud can actually happen. I'm not trying to give anybody ideas, because if you get caught, then it could be pretty costly for you, whether it costs you a lot of money out of pocket to defend yourself, or a lot of people end up going to jail for years, whether it's 5 years or 15 years or even longer, depending on the level of fraud. You know, it's just not worth it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I was curious about that. What, for one reason, I mean, I know there have been situations, for example, where there's been identity theft and people have gotten mortgages under other people's names and proceeded to purchase property and stuff like that. So, like you say, you don't necessarily give anybody ideas, but still you do want to make sure that people are aware that, you know, and are careful when they're considering these transactions.
Yeah, because if somebody has your information and they go through a process of, you know, the underwriting process, and really a notary is supposed to, of course, verify the identity of the person who is signing. And that could either be that person has a fake ID or the notary knows that that person is not that person and they're just running, you know, their own scam and signing, notarizing documents that aren't even signed by the person that is supposed to be purchasing the property. And usually these things, whenever everything unfolds, you find out that there's multiple parties involved on different parts of the transaction, from the notary to the title company, the realtor, the mortgage broker. And, you know, yes, you hear about literally millions of dollars that are being made, but unless you could find some way to to disappear off the face of the earth, it's when you're defrauding the bank for that much money, they're going to find a way to find you. I mean, it's crazy how, I mean, I'm not sure if it's just a snowball effect where they just can't stop. But, I mean, you hear about all the time, $8, $9, $10, $40 million schemes, you know, $15 million schemes. And I'm not sure how people think that they could get away with $15 million in scams and the bank not find out. But, you know, they do eventually. It ends up catching up with everybody.
Wow. So we're going to take a break, but we're talking about some mortgage issues that we want you guys to be aware of, the appraisal changes and also some possible mortgage fraud. We are here with Jabir Najir of Rajan Mortgage. If you have questions for Jabir, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. We're here with Jabir Najir of Rajan Mortgage, and we were talking about changes in how your property has been appraised or is being appraised and how that may impact the way of the future in terms of appraisals. And we were talking about mortgage fraud. And by the way, if you have been a victim of mortgage fraud that you know of, or know someone that's, you know, maybe you've been a victim of identity theft and got a mortgage in their name, because I know it has happened, you know, give us a call and tell us about it. The number is 516-387-1944. Also, if you have questions for Jabir, 516-387-1944. But I want to go back to the appraisal thing, because I've just had kind of an issue over the past year, just things that I've learned and discovered with regards to just the general way appraisals have been done, much less this new thing. And I wanted to ask you is do you think doing the desktop appraisal will have any impact on discriminatory practices with appraisals? I mean, and you know, this has come up a conversation before where we found that in certain neighborhoods or when certain owners are involved, people of color, you know, usually, the appraisal has been different, lower in some cases than it has been in other areas. Do you think by doing just a desktop appraisal might eliminate maybe some of that, or are there still factors involved that could lead toward discrimination, you think?
I think that it could. I think it will eliminate a lot of that, only because now the appraiser is not going to the home. I mean, assuming that is an appraiser that does practice in that unlawful type of practice of when they're evaluating the home based on who the mm-hmm. owner is and what their ethnic background may be. So I guess it could eliminate that unless they're actually looking at the name of the person and trying to determine, you know, what race that person may be based on their name. Because there are
yeah.
certain names, of course, that
some of that is happening
that
now
you can,
too.
Yeah. Right. And then that's a good question. I don't know. I think it could eliminate a lot, but it also could possibly cause some other issues. And you deal with the neighborhoods. I think that it's possible that they may discriminate based on the neighborhood. But that's a possibility. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think it could have a lot of benefit, though. I'm probably going to lean more towards benefit than anything, because at the end of the day, the appraisers know, and when they're visiting these properties, they know who the name on their appraisal. They know the name before they even go out there. So now they're going to these homes and they're seeing either they look at the family that opens up the door, or if it's a sale and they use their key to, you know, their I forgot the name of the real estate key there to,
mm-hmm.
to get into the lockbox. You know, they're going to the homes, they're seeing the pictures in the house. So, but now they don't have that. So now it just leaves it to the name and not the picture. So I guess it could actually be of a benefit.
Okay. All right.
Now,
so,
the neighborhood thing, that may be a whole different thing. They may actually look at the neighborhood
mm-hmm.
and make the determination based on the neighborhood. That could be a problem.
Right. Yeah. Always a work in progress there.
Yeah.
So I want to ask about something else I saw with regards to not seeing, I guess, as many 30-year mortgages as seeing more 15 to 20-year mortgages. Have you seen that trend?
I actually still is majority 30-year, at least for me.
Okay.
But there are a lot more clients who are entertaining the 15 and 20-year mortgages, and even 25, just to bring it down, because we can't do 25, but definitely a lot of clients are asking about the 15 and 20. But for me, the majority still is a 30-year. Even when they're refinancing, a lot of times they're looking to save as much money as they can, and they're still, even if they've been in the home for 7, 8, 10 years, they'll still go back to a 30. So overall, yes, you do save a ton of money by going to a 15 versus a 30 in interest, but you're also paying more money per month in order to pay that home off in 15 years versus 30. So even though, yes, if you're asking what would be on paper the best financial decision of 15 or 30, yes, to 15, you also want to make sure you're not putting yourself in a tight situation financially just to make those payments. You know, are you going to have to sacrifice, you know, what would be called the basic necessities in life, you know, whether it's food or, you know, how much usage of electricity you use because, you know, you're trying to pay off this mortgage in 15 years so you can't enjoy certain things of the home because you're trying to pay it off faster. Now that's the sacrifice you're willing to take and you're willing to dedicate yourself to that for 15 years or 20 years, then, you know, that's based on your comfort level. But, you know, the only advice I would have for that is to, if you can't afford the 15 years based on your debt to income ratio, you want to make sure that what you have to pay on your mortgage, the increase in the mortgage payment, will actually fit your lifestyle, or if not, what we have to give up in order to make that payment for the 15 or the 20 year mortgage.
Okay. So, I guess for practical reasons, it might be better just to go ahead and do the 30-year and then, you know, pay extra on the principal or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, because many times, in some cases, the rates, don't get me wrong, the 15 and the 20-year rates are lower. But in certain profiles, even though there's a difference, the difference isn't that great, that maybe it may be worth it to take the 20-year payment, the 30-year payment, and then make the payments as if you're going to pay off the home in 20 years. Because the only thing with the 20-year take the rate out of consideration. The biggest difference between the 20-year and the 30-year is that you're committing to make a higher payment for 20 years versus a 30-year payment. But the good thing with the 30-year is that you know that, hey, if there's a tight month, you can always revert back to the 30-year payment. But you know up front that you have to pay this, whatever that dollar amount is, X amount of dollars per month to pay off the home in 20 years. The bank, especially if you have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan, or FHA and VA, so any of those agency or government programs, loan programs, then they're not penalizing you for paying off the home early. But normally the prepayment penalties for most homes, if you are in a non-conventional loan program, are anywhere between 2 to 5 years. But most are probably 2 to 3. But usually within that period of time, if you pay off the mortgage or if you pay down a certain percentage in a 12-month period. So normally they're saying if you pay down more than 20%, for example, in a 12-month period, which it's very rare that somebody does, especially if they're making monthly payments. But, if you're definitely in a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, any of those standard loan programs, then yes, you can always make the commit to the 30-year mortgage payment, but then just calculate, or your broker, you know, can always tell you what your payment would have to be to pay off the home in 15 years.
Okay. All right. So, and now, can you do that? Well, never mind. Let me just go on to something else. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the rates, because one of the things that I saw was that the rates are at an 8-month high. Is that correct?
Yes, so the rates started to increase probably around the beginning of February this year, and they just took off from February. It was just a slow increase, and then just started to speed up through March and in April. But it started to calm down. The rates started to lower throughout the summer, but then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they started to increase rapidly. Or they start to increase slowly, I should say, probably September-ish, and just been increasing slightly over, especially the last 3 weeks, we saw a bigger increase in the rates. So don't get me wrong, the rates are still low, so I don't want to scare anybody off. But yes, there definitely is an uptick in rates. So you can possibly still get rates for your conventional loans in the high twos, but you're probably going to see around three and an eighth, maybe 3.25 on the high side as of today. And FHA is still below a 3. FHA is right around 2.75 to 2.85 right now.
Okay, so yeah, basically they're still when I compare them to previous years, you know, and when I compare them to the fact originally before COVID, the rates were estimated to go up, I think, to 5-something in 2020 pre-COVID, and then they just kind of went the other direction, which was good. But, you know, I mean, you still kind of want to make sure you're getting the best rate while the prices of the homes are still not necessarily going down. And there are some cases where there's some stability, but, you know, they're kind of still hanging on there to those high prices.
Yeah. I think that for anybody that is looking at rates and when our rates are going to go, anytime there's the conversation of inflation starts to tick up, the rates start to tick up as well. There's multiple factors, but one of the easiest and biggest things to kind of determine where the rates are going is the 10-year yield. So whenever that 10-year yield goes up, the rates are going up. When the 10-year yield goes down, the rates are going down. And that 10-year yield, and you can quickly Google, I mean, there's many sources, but I'd probably say the easiest one is probably MarketWatch. So if you just Google MarketWatch 10-year yield, the chart will pull up. And you don't have to worry about too much about the 10-year yield, what does it mean or what ticks it up. Just on the off the top, just very top layer, if you just look at the chart over the course of the last year, and you'll see some ups and downs. And every time that went up, the rates went up. When everything it went, every time it went down, it went down. The overall trend is up right now. But, yeah, you could just quickly just look at the 10-year yield and kind of determine where rates are going, even without having to call into a mortgage broker to find out. That is, and there's many other websites. There's Mortgage News Daily. That's a very easy source for, you know, consumers to check in with to see what's going on with the rates. And that will not only bring in a 10-year yield, but also let you know where the different mortgage rates are, whether it's FHA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, et cetera.
We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Jabir Najeer of Rajan Mortgage. It's Mortgage Monday on G's Power Hour, the first Monday of each month. If you have a question, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is Mortgage Monday on G's Power Hour, the first Monday of each month. And if you have questions for Jabir Najeer of Rajan Mortgage, who's our guest today, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. One article I saw was a question about should people who are of retirement age, looking at a retirement home, should they consider a reverse mortgage for a retirement home? What are your thoughts?
I think it's really dependent on their financial situation again. But the reverse mortgage is actually a very, very good tool to help alleviate some of the stress that they may run into in their later years where there may be a reduction in income. So the reverse mortgage actually uses the equity in your home, and the bank will actually allows you to not have to make any mortgage payments, and in some cases you actually can get a monthly check or a line of credit that you can actually use on a monthly basis to help take care of your basic needs. So in a sense, the equity of the home actually pays – the equity in the home actually helps to fund your basic living needs. And they actually determine that based off your age, which you have to be – you have to at least be 62 to qualify for a reverse mortgage. And the amount of equity needed is dependent upon your age. So if you're 62, they're going to require that you have a lot more equity because they base it off your life expectancy. Where if you're older, say, just thrown out 90, if you're 90, then they require less in equity in your home in order to qualify for a reverse mortgage. So it is a good tool if you understand how the reverse mortgages work. A lot of times people don't fully understand how the reverse mortgages work, and they think it's a negative thing or the bank is out to get your home. Then one of the most important things is, for anybody to remember, that the bank is still wants their interest on the money that they're lending you. So let's just say that you have a home that has a balance of $200,000, but it's worth $400,000. If you're 62 or above, you most likely will qualify for a reverse mortgage. You don't have to worry about making mortgage payments. You can even possibly get a check from the bank on a monthly basis to help fund your basic living needs. And that also, one of the other biggest things, it actually helps to alleviate some of the stress that other family members may have on helping their parents or their grandparents meet the basic needs of holding on to their home. So sometimes, yes, there's a mortgage to pay, and family members are helping to chip in to help that family member who's older, whether it's grandma or mom or, you know, aunt or whoever it may be. And now they no longer have to worry about keeping a roof over that person's head. Now they could just focus on the basics, keeping electricity on, keeping food in the refrigerator, those type of basic necessities. But the thing that everybody must remember is that the bank is not giving you a free $200,000 just because you have equity in your home. That is an investment that they want to collect interest off. So that monthly interest that you would normally pay in your mortgage payments, that and what they call a forward mortgage, now because you're not paying interest, the bank is just going to tack it onto the back and say, hey, you know what, we'll collect on this money, whether it's 10, 15, 20 years from now, don't worry about it. So when that family member passes on, there are cases where the other family members say, hey, grandma wasn't paying a mortgage and this was her house. I get to live in a home for free too. And sometimes some family members believe that this home that was never paid off because grandma had a reverse mortgage, that family members could live in the home for eternity and not have to make this payment, which normally you're going to get 6 months to determine if a family member is going to purchase a home or you're going to sell the home. And there's $200,000 in equity. The great thing is you get $200,000 if you sell the home, because that's the equity that was left in the home. Now, you have to determine how that's split up between family. If a lot of families determine that they should actually get a piece of the pie. But the thing is that the bank is not saying we take the home. The bank is saying, hey, there's $200,000 worth of equity. Sell the home. This $200,000 is yours, assuming there's $200,000 in equity. Now, if you say, you know, we really want to keep hold on to the home, the bank is typically going to give you 6 months to determine how you're going to purchase this home, meaning how you're going to pay off the mortgage that grandma had on the balance had on the home. And if you need an additional 6 months, they normally will give you an extension for 6 months to determine what you're going to do with the home. After a year, you have to keep in mind it's a business for the bank. You owe the bank money, they're going to say, okay, if you can't determine what's going to happen with the home, we're just going to go ahead and take the home and sell the home, because at that point they go through the process of taking control of the home. So as long as you understand those basics, then you're totally protected. It could be a very good asset. I actually had a client probably a year and a half ago where her mom had a reverse mortgage. Her mom passed away. Now she's at the age where she's older and she's not as mobile as she used to. And she swears by the reverse mortgage. And a financial advisor tries to speak out of it. She's like, listen, my mom had this. It was the best thing that ever happened to her. And she's like, I want the same thing. So my kids have to worry about the basic keeping the roof over my head. And there's nothing that anybody could tell her, because it worked out so well for her mom. And she's able to give her mom a very, very, very good, very, very good quality of life in her later years. And she wants that for herself. So as long as you understand how the basics of reverse mortgage work, then it's a good thing. Now, if the kids say, hey, I don't want my parents or my grandmother to have a reverse mortgage because the balance is going to go up and then there won't be any equity in the home for us, then the best suggestion I have is that you have to find a way to take the stress off of grandma's back, and you have to go ahead and cover her basic expenses. If you're going to cover basic, I mean, I don't want to get into the family and how the family should operate. So that, I'm not stepping into that space, but if you take care of all grandma's basic needs and she needs for nothing, then maybe that is something you say, hey, don't sell the home. I'm going to take over the home. I'm going to take care of everything while you're here. But, you know, as I said, I'm not trying to step into family business there, how you operate the family, but it is a great tool for those who qualify if they don't have the financial means to make ends meet.
Good. I'm glad you went over that. That gives a lot of good information. You know, I mean, they really, legislation has really tightened up on those. So, you know, some of the things that were going on before that people are kind of concerned about, they're not really happening anymore with the current reverse mortgages that they have.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Hey, one thing I'll also add to that, because not only just for reverse mortgages, because sometimes there are alternatives out there for people who are in financial hardship with their and they have a mortgage to worry about, is don't get into the situation where you're in a forward mortgage and you don't want to take other options and end up losing the home to foreclosure. There's definitely been many cases over. I mean, I've been in the business since 2004, so you can imagine how many stories you hear. And you come to somebody with an alternative and they turn it down because they don't believe that's the best alternative for them and they don't like something about it. And then now you have a hard time making the mortgage payment, but then now the bank has to take it back because you're 6 months behind in the mortgage and you didn't come up with an alternative. I've seen where even cases where some people have $100,000 worth of equity in their home, they're having a hard time making a mortgage payment and they allow the home to go to foreclosure, where all they had to do is call the realtor, say, I want to put my house up for sale, and you sell the home, you walk away with $100,000 cash in your pocket. But because you didn't want to sell the home, you're just determined to find a way to keep the home, and a year goes by, a year and a half goes by, and you haven't made a mortgage payment, the bank says, hey, we'll just take the home from you. You're not making mortgage payments. So, yes, I understand you may get put in a financial situation that is not ideal. You never imagine in 1,000 years that you'd be in a situation. But if you have equity in your home, it's very, very hard for me to see why anybody who has a lot of equity in the home ends up getting foreclosed on. And then the other situation is when it comes to those who qualify for reverse mortgage, if there's no family member to help you out, you are having a hard time making a mortgage payment, look into a reverse mortgage. At least you don't have to move out of that home due to foreclosure and have to now find somebody who will rent a room to you, or now you have to pay rent to somebody instead of having a home you just could have lived in for the rest of your life without any mortgage payments. So if you don't have those financial means for what you feel is ideal, don't end up in an even worse position only because you didn't want to take those other alternative options.
Okay. One thing you mentioned that I was going to ask you about too, so you're doing good today in terms of leading into stuff. Foreclosures, what are you seeing? You know, and there was a time where, you know, people wanted to ride that coattail, you know, just grab hold of you know, any foreclosure that they found out there and thinking they could, you know, make some money or at least, you know, maybe get into some property in a relatively cheap way. But is that making a comeback, so to speak?
Personally, I haven't seen or even heard of a lot. There was a time, and I say time, I'm talking about recent months, within the last 60 days, I was hearing a lot more people in certain situations where they're not able to work something out with their bank. So I think between sales, them just selling their home, because a lot of people actually have a lot of equity in their property, and there's not so many people that's over, not saying there's none, but there's not as many over-leveraged properties as there was back in, you know, 2008-2009 era, where you have to remember that there are mortgages where you can actually take out 125% of your value of your home. There are also mortgages that you could literally take cash out up to 100% of the value of the home. So when you got ready to sell the home, there was no money in there for agents to make any money, for the title company, for all these costs that are involved in selling a home. There's no money left. So there, at a point, there was nothing else left but foreclosure as far as options. A lot of people actually have equity in their home, so when their back is against the wall, as long as they realize, like, hey, I'm not going to be able to hold on to this house, I think those people are actually, you know, going through the process of selling if they're not able to work out something with a refinance. I'm not sure what the actual data says when it comes to the uptick in foreclosure. I have to check, but as far as any type of wave or anything like that, nothing that stands out so far.
Okay. And, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll hear what Jabir Nadir arrived on mortgage. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had a So Good Entertainment. If you have questions when we come back, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. And when we come back, I wanted to, well, we'll talk about it when we come back. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison, and I think I found a way to help you understand what is Chill Out Jazz.
Some of y'all may think of because of the style we choose. We make jazz in R&B. We don't categorize. We just make what sound good, baby.
Is it jazz?
It is what it is.
Is it R&B?
Tune in every Wednesday night at 10 on KHAM Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. And just wanted to let you know that coming up this week, we're going to talk economics on Friday. But wanted to also let you know we're going to talk a little bit about what happened to the Florida film industry. You know, at one point in time, it looked like it was, you know, on the rise, but just haven't heard a lot these days. So we have someone that's going to talk to us about that. A little later on in the week. But right now we're back with Jabir Najeer of Ryazan Mortgage. And I wanted to find out, with the holidays, I guess you could say here now, I was going to say approaching, but basically we're in November, they're here. What things should people consider when they are considering purchasing possibly a home with the hopes of maybe getting it by the end of the year or into it at the beginning of next year? What do you have any suggestions or any history that people should be aware of?
Yes. Well, as far as preparing, you know, one of the best things the first thing I'm always going to suggest is that you get pre-approved or see what your financial situation is well ahead of you getting ready to purchase the home. Even recently, I've had a couple clients that were interested in purchasing a home, but they put off the pre-approval process, and I can't force you to go through the pre-approval process. I'm going to answer any questions you have, or if you call, I'm always going to suggest that, you know, you allow me to look at your situation before, you know, you start to go through the process, or before you actually say, I'm ready to move forward now and purchase a home next month. Because there have been a couple of cases where I was talking to a few clients for months, even in one case, probably over a year, and they got ready to move forward, and they need to be in a home within, I think it was 60 to like 75 days. And we reviewed credit, and there's a lot of stuff that was going on that put in a position they weren't, there's no way that they were going to be ready in 60 days to purchase a home. But actually, they need to be in a home in 60 days. So really, they would have to have that credit together within the next 15 to 20 days. And it just wasn't possible. So the biggest thing is, no matter how much you think that you may know what's going on, or you may go to Credit Karma and, you know, you see that your score is a certain score within Credit Karma. One of the biggest things I'm going to mention with Credit Karma is that they use a different credit score model than the mortgage industry does, or in a lot of other industries, period. And this is actually on Credit Karma's website. Don't take it from my mouth. Just go to their website. Usually just Google Credit Karma, why is my credit score different than other credit pools? And it'll lead you directly to Credit Karma, and they'll let you know that they use a scoring model called the Vantage 3.0, and we use Fair Isaac, FICO. So even though you're looking at TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax, there are different scoring models underneath each one of those bureaus. And I know it sounds crazy, but they actually have, you know, different scoring models even underneath the FICO and Fair Isaac formula. So it's definitely, whether you're looking to buy a car or buy a house, definitely have somebody within that industry pull your credit so they can let you know what they see and what is actually needed to get your credit on point to actually purchase a home. That's the biggest thing I would say. And then also, if you're self-employed, that's even a bigger reason to contact your broker ahead of time, because there's many times I'm speaking to somebody self-employed. Not, it's not so much of an issue for those who are W-2, unless you are commission-based W-2, where or 25% or more of your income is based on commissions or bonuses. That's a totally different situation. Even if you're W-2, you still need to talk to your broker, because we need to see what your write-offs are, what you're actually claiming when you have 25% or more of your income being in commission. We almost treat it like it's self-employment. Now, when it comes to 1099 or self-employed bars, there's many times I hear a certain dollar amount that they make, and when I look at their tax returns, it's nowhere close to that, like not even in the same ballpark, because they write off so many things. And as a broker, there are certain things we can add back in. We can add back in depreciation. If you wrote off interest on your mortgage, we can add that back into your income. But when you have hard costs such as supplies, advertising, marketing, phone expenses, the way that we look at these is that, yes, in order for you to make this $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 gross, whatever that dollar amount may be, your business expenses are X. Whether it's $100,000, I'm just going to throw out numbers. Let's just say that you grossed $200,000 for your business, but your expenses to run that business, to gross that $200,000, is $125,000. Well, the income we can use is $75,000, because you actually don't have $200,000 to spend. In order to make $200,000, your tax returns say you have to spend $125,000. So the underwriter is going to look at it and say, okay, what is the money that's left over for you that you could actually live off of, which is the $75,000? So there's many times where somebody may come to me and say, yes, last year I made $200,000. I may say, okay, how much of that income do you claim has your net income? And sometimes they still say the $200,000, or sometimes they have no idea. And when I get their tax returns, it's a lot less. So it's just very important that you allow a broker to evaluate your taxes so we can determine how much money you have so we can qualify you off of that. Now, I have mentioned in some of our previous shows, we won't get into that too much now, there are alternative programs for 1099 and self-employed borrowers. It does require a larger down payment of 10%, but we can actually qualify you strictly based off of the deposits that are going in your account on a monthly basis. So we don't care about tax returns. We don't care about W-2s, pay stubs, any of that stuff. We just look at 12 months of bank statements. Take those deposits and divide it by 12. We can't count transfers. If you transfer money from your savings to your checking, that's not income. That's just moving money from your right hand to your left hand. You still have the same amount of money. But if it's actually business income, we don't, as I said, we don't care about tax returns. We can actually go off the deposits in your account. That's only for self-employed borrowers. If you're a W-2 employee, that doesn't count. We have to see your W-2s at the bare minimum. In some cases, we need your tax returns. And one of the other things I'll say is just also talk to the real estate agent, because a lot of times you have a certain idea of what your price point will be, even though you may hear that prices are blowing through the roof. There's been so many times that when the client actually decides to step in the market, even if they've heard that prices are rising, they had no idea how much they've actually increased. So they spend the first sometimes 30 days in shock or not having a very good reality of the market, because the home they're looking for is really $400,000, but they keep looking for a home. They're trying to find this $400,000 home in a $250,000 or $300,000 bracket, and then they're finding homes that are $350,000 and they're putting offers for $300,000. And sometimes it takes a month of them going through this for them to realize, like, oh wow, I'm not going to get this home for $250,000 or $300,000. I really am going to increase my price to $400,000. Or you have to live with the reality of what the $300,000 will purchase, will allow you to purchase.
Right.
So you may not get that huge, not saying that you won't get a new home or you won't get a nice home, definitely don't take, misconstrue those words, but you may not have the home with the pool, or you may not have the, you know, the five-bedroom home, and maybe a four-bedroom, not a four-bedroom home, it's a three-bedroom home, or maybe you may not have the big backyard where you have the pool and a garden and area to have a little teacher retreat or something out there. It may not have all that backyard space that you're looking for. So not saying you will not get a nice home. It just may not be as many amenities in this home as you are expecting. You may not have the bonus room to have a room specifically dedicated for entertainment with a pool table and the big screen TV to watch the fights or the games, whatever it may be. So it's just very important that you reach out to the agent ahead of time and say, hey, I'm looking for something in this price point. And that way you can kind of mentally prepare yourself even 4 months before you step into the market. So those will probably be the top three, not to overwhelm you with points.
Okay. So let me ask you this real quick. What about we're hearing that a lot, some people are not going back to the job market. So how is that affecting people who are, maybe considering buying a home? I mean, do you go back to the job market? Do you take a job that's not necessarily in your field or not necessarily in your salary range as before? Or do you say, okay, we've decided that we're just going to operate off the one income? Does that loss of income, well, I know it has probably an impact in terms of how much home you can afford, but does that have an impact, let's say, in terms of what lenders are looking at in terms of credit and credit scores?
Well, when it comes to extended credit, if there's a dual income household, then everything will be dependent just on that one single household income that's still coming in if the other person decides not to return back to the job market. Now, I know that people aren't returning back to the job market for many reasons, whether they're making at one point more income based off of the assistance that was given out to them, or some have actually found that they took the assistance during the pandemic, and it allowed them to go back and study to get into a field that they enjoyed more. Maybe they were working in a very high, intense labor job.
Yeah.
Right. And now they went back and they gained a new skill over the last year that will allow them to get into a job that's not so labor intensive. Or they actually became self-employed, and that's one of the things with the recession back in 2008, 2009, where people became, there's a lot of success stories where people were fired from their job, whether accountant or whatever they may have been, because their back was against the wall and they had to find a way to survive, they ended up opening up a business. They had a great idea to open up a business, and they're making 2, 3, 4 times the amount of income that they were at their previous job, and they never imagined that they'd ever be a self-employed entrepreneur. So you hear about these stories that have come out of recessions, and that could possibly be what's happening here. A lot of people are going into fields that, yes, you may actually, and I've had people come to me that they're making a lot of money. They truly look at their bank statements, look at the income, they're making a lot of money, but now you're self-employed. So even though you've had a great 8 months, because you're self-employed, we have to actually have those tax returns to show what your net income is after expenses. And, yes, I understand you could give me your QuickBooks to show that you don't have a lot of expenses, but we actually have to see what you actually filed with the IRS. Not only that, because you're in a new field, we need 2 years of that before we can actually qualify you based on that income, because you may have had a very great year because of a big account that you got. So we want to see consistency in that.
So the rules in your life may have changed, but in the workers industry, not so much. So you still need to show that.
Yeah, you may be doing great, and you may not be going back to work because of a great opportunity that you have. And it may be that you're 1099, your contractor, whatever the situation may be. But, yeah, we definitely need that. We definitely need that history when you're self-employed.
Jabir, thanks so much. Jabir Najeer, Rajan Mortgage. How do people contact you really quick?
You can contact me by email, Jabir, J-A-B-I-R, at Rajan, RIAJAN.com, or contact me at 321-239-5814 as my cell, or at the office, 888-326-0285.
Have a blessed day and week, Jabir. Thanks so much, and hopefully talk with you next month. Take care.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks again for joining us. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, All real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.